Hey guys, welcome to Manufacturing Unscripted. I'm your host, Matt Rall.
And I'm Lauren.
Today our guest is Matt Jordan, a local teacher here at Brighton High School who teaches engineering technology to all the students. And I wanted to bring him on today because he's done a great job in terms of introducing manufacturing technologies and really showing students what manufacturing can offer them.
Yeah, and I was excited to talk to him too because I'm really inspired by our local schools teaching students like brand new technology without them having to learn it in college and kind of getting that first world experience.
Yeah, no, he's a very impressive individual because he is, as you'll learn, the visionary, the main trainer. He is the driving force for this, and I think it truly shows that it takes a special person to be able to do that.
Yeah, he's super passionate about what he does, and it truly shows.
Yeah, so without further ado, enjoy the show.
This podcast is sponsored by Promus Incorporated, the leading provider of fully electric servo presses for manufacturing. Promus provides global support for pressing and motion control applications in multiple industries. With precise positioning and in-process force monitoring, your company will begin to see ROI on day one. Call 810-229-9334 or email sales@promusinc.com to speak with an expert engineer about your application today.
All right. Well, great. Thanks, Matt, for being on the show today. So as I said before and when we were talking, something that I wanted to do was kind of highlight some coworkers or colleagues, I guess, that I've been working with within the industry to kind of pre-expose students to manufacturing. We talk a lot about current employees and things like that, but we didn't really talk, we've not really talked about, aside from Nick, about how do we even introduce manufacturing to students? And I know from your work, you've been doing a lot of introduction to the technology, you know, trades, just manufacturing in general. And so I thought it'd be cool to kind of highlight what you guys are doing and kind of give you a kudos in that regard. So, you know, you're the engineering technology teacher at Brighton High School.
Yes. Yep. So our program, you know, it's a wide variety. You kind of mentioned we cover a lot of different areas, which is really exciting for our students to get exposed to. Because you're right, trying to get students introduced to the world of manufacturing is a big challenge. And how do we integrate that within our schools?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you know, one thing I think I mentioned to you before is when you take like that test of what's your career like based off these answers. Traditionally, when I think I took it, plumber or electrician or things, those weren't on the list, right? It was lawyer, doctor, engineer, you know.
Culinary arts.
Yeah, four-year degree schools that, you know, tuition and all that stuff. But with the way tuition's going now in college and skyrocketing costs, you know, trades is becoming more on demand. So the actual how much you can make from either profession is – the gap is a lot closer than it's ever been. And so I guess – something I want to talk about with your career is, one, is how you ended up in engineering technology, right? Because as far as I know, I don't know if teachers go to teacher school to to become an engineering technology teacher. And then also, like, how did you start the program and build it? And yeah. So I don't know if you can share a little bit on that.
Yeah, so I actually did go to school to be an industrial arts teacher.
Okay.
There is programs still around. In the state of Michigan, there's only one that's at Western Michigan University.
Okay.
Is the last one that's left. Other universities will create programs for people if they want to go in there, but it's kind of a big challenge because you're starting from scratch, where at Western – they take all the career and technical education programs. So that's not only engineering, but it's the manufacturing, the trades you mentioned, along with culinary, family consumer sciences, and business departments. So we have specific classes within the education college directed towards career and tech student or people who want to be teachers in those fields. So I actually went to school for that intentionally. Mm-hmm. I had a great time in high school taking engineering and manufacturing courses, and I just knew I wanted to work with people, and mm-hmm. teaching was a really good avenue. My dad was a teacher, so I kind of already knew what it was made up of. And I had a lot of good mentors and role models in the teaching world. So when I went to Western, I majored in industrial arts with a specialty in drafting. And drafting was what it was at the time. Now they've changed it to – it was still board drafting, believe it or not. We can say that I'm that old.
Yeah.
They've since changed it to technology education is what it is now. And so it's a traditional four-year education program. When I graduated in 2003, there was 10 of us. That was the largest class Western had seen of industrial arts teacher in something like 30 years. So unfortunately, there's not a lot of people going mm-hmm. in there, right? Because if I wanted to, I could go into industry and technically make more money, right? Yep. But I knew I wanted to work with students and develop those skills and teach those skills to students. Mm-hmm. So my career there, it led me to Brighton. I'm originally a graduate of Howell, so it's our rival school, which is always fun to rib on people. Mm-hmm. And I actually took over for a teacher who retired after 35 years. So he taught drafting as well, woodworking, and a little bit of metals. So when I took the program over, I took over just the engineering drafting portion. So it was basically traditional board drafting mixed mm-hmm. with introduction to CAD. And then over the years, we've been able to expand and introduce students to other technologies as I've worked with other manufacturers, gone to conferences and looking at best practices at the manufacturing level, but also at the post-secondary level. And be able to work with those groups and see where the shortfalls were lying mm-hmm. as they've been able to build my curriculum to hopefully mitigate those shortfalls. So that way the Brighton students that are graduating through our program are that much further ahead of their cohort mm-hmm. as they go off to university.
I guess who's like the visionary? Is it you like behind the direction of the technologies you take on? Like I know you have a lot of corporate partners and things like that, but like who's the puppet master here that's pulling all the strings?
Yeah, that's me. it's a passion, right?
Yeah.
You know, I could easily go into the career and just say, hey, I'm going to be a CAD teacher and I'm going to teach nothing mm-hmm. but CAD. We're going to do design work and that's it. But the reality is that's a shortfall for the students, right? Because we know in manufacturing, we're much more than just a tube and a mm-hmm. CAD software, right? We have to bring in constantly adapt to new technologies and adapt to working with other people that know are experts in those, right? We got to be able to talk to them intelligently. So I'm kind of the visionary working alongside my advisory board and trying to figure out where, again, at the post-secondary manufacturing, what can we do best to prepare our students when they come to you, right? Mm-hmm. When they go to the next level. And then hopefully we retain them, right? So if you look at, you know, graduation rates at the university in terms of engineering, they're not great. Right. Mm-hmm. When you look at the total number of students that enroll in engineering college as a freshman, and you look at the numbers when they as seniors, I mean, it's a fraction of who's actually there. And so if we can better prepare those students, it's just that much better for our students. It's better for the university. It's better for the manufacturers going forward.
Just for those listening, because the list is pretty impressive, can you just name off some of the technologies that you have in your? So for those listening, Brighton High School, the district, and I'll speak for them on your behalf, has been very generous in terms of funding and allocating things to Matt and what he's been able to do. I mean, there's their facility, once you hear what he has, is better than most colleges. And so I don't know if you want to list some of the technologies that you can offer and expose students to at a very young age.
Yeah. So so we are a vocationally certified program through the federal government, which means we receive Perkins grant money. Mm-hmm. So we actually, when students walk into my door, they come with extra added cost dollars. Mm-hmm. So beyond the taxpayer dollars, we get extra to help support mm-hmm. the program. So we've been able to develop the program to not only do CAD, but we started getting to electrical circuit design, moving into working with control systems, PLCs, Arduinos, and developing that side, both working through the CAD and then doing it in the real world. We have additive manufacturing pieces. Along with the additive manufacturing pieces, we've been able to add things like 3D scanners, so we can do a lot of reverse engineering of our products for the students, so they can experience the whole workflow. And then going into, we just additionally added CNC machining. So now the students are going to be able to take the CAD model, create the G&M code, and then actually manufacture that piece, or at least see what that process of workflow goes. We've also added in some robotic arms. We have two FANUC industrial robotic arms and one cooperative robot, robotic arm from FANUC. So again, now we're getting those students that might be interested more in industrial engineering, right? Setting up the work cells and setting up the factories, they can start to see what that side looks like and how those systems get put together. And so we just consistently try to expose students to as many different areas as possible, so that way when they do go off and they want to pick a major, find a field they really like or a company they really like, they kind of have some knowledge already and are able to talk intelligently about it.
And you yourself go through the training on all this equipment.
I do, So the whole square footage, you asked kind of about the facility. So our facility is about 6,000 square feet of lab space. And believe it or not, we're already starting to fill that space up, which is really cool because we're constantly bringing in those technologies for the kids. So we aim for train-the-trainer model. I am the head trainer, if you will, of the classroom. But as the students go through my program, which they can take up to 4 years with me, we are an elective-based class, which means that students just kind of fit in their schedule where they can, along with their graduation requirement classes like your math, your science, your social studies.
That's the two-hour block they can take every semester with you for 4 years?
So we have one-hour semester courses.
Okay.
So there's two semesters a year. Or we have a two-hour block option that's a year long that students can take multiple times for credit. Mm-hmm. So we try to mix and match and try to get it to fit the student schedule as best we can. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges in education is – most CT classes are electives, right? So they're secondary classes. And how do we consistently mix those in and say, hey, these are just as important as your core classes, your math, your science, which are really, really important. But how do we get those mixed in there so students are being better prepared going forward? We do count for some graduation credits, but even those graduations are kind of still secondary overall. And so it's a huge challenge on our end. For especially Brighton, where we're more of what we consider a college preparatory school, right?
Yep.
So core academics are highly pushed. Advanced placement classes are highly pushed, which is great. They're important classes. But how do we get that student that's taking AP Calc, AP Physics, that wants to be an engineer, how do we get them into an engineering class? So that way they have those basic skills. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've got the theoretical raw skills, but now where are we going to build those practical skills, right? So within that program, going back to the train-the-trainer model, so I will train students and then I will release them and say, okay, now you're going to be the person, the contact person for this machine. Mm-hmm. If I'm busy working with another group of students and somebody needs help, you're going to be the one teaching them. You're going to be the expert in it. And you're going to be able to explain to what's happening and show them the workflow on those machines.
That's great.
So they kind of take an ownership of the lab itself.
So what about the engagement from the students? Have you seen like a really positive feedback from the students in terms of what the school's offering?
Oh, for sure. With students that go through my program, if they take typically, we'll say 2 years with me, it's the equivalent of the first year and a half of engineering classes.
Mm-hmm.
We go through the design process, we go through the project building process, troubleshooting, the whole engineering design process. And so when the students come back to me and they're like, thank you. This helps so much because, again, they're that much further ahead of their cohort. And the real positives we're seeing now is my students are getting internships the summer of the year they graduate high school, if not their first freshman year of college, which was just really, really a big challenge. Mm-hmm. And if you go traditionally, that was kind of unheard of, right? But our students' resumes are looking like those of sophomores and juniors in college. And so the companies that we work with are recognizing that. And you know, when they see Brighton High School and they see in the engineering mm-hmm. classes, it's that much more of a feather in the cap for the kids.
No, yeah, I mean, from an employer's perspective, right, and you know, we always kind of want to try to bring it back to that, is you guys are basically, you know, expanding the workforce pool that they can choose from, right? Because you're adding, you know, 17, 18, 19-year-olds basically to the pool for people they can choose from.
Right.
You know, and they're also, you know, getting exposed to earlier, so you might even be getting more people because, you know, how many students go for a four-year degree for 3 years and realize this isn't for me, mm-hmm. and they fall back onto something else.
Right.
You know, so, you know, it's not even just 3 years earlier. You could, you know, it's like almost a six-year swing, right? Because they're learning that much further ahead. So I think there's value there as well. Also, you know, we've talked about it too, is sometimes you get students that don't know which way to turn a screwdriver.
Right.
So those practical skills, you know, I as an employer wouldn't have to teach. They just come in knowing.
Right.
You know, and I think there's a lot of value in that as well.
Yeah. So, you know, when we talk to the students about signing up for an engineering class, that I don't necessarily go out to try to make every single one of them an engineer or enter the mm-hmm. manufacturing force, because, you know, the reality is that we know that's not going to be the case. You kind of just said it there that, you know, some students will go into university for 3 years and be like, hey, I don't want to be an engineer, but I just spent 3 years doing it. But like what I talk about with the students as we go through, whether it be a coding class where we work with Fanuc Arms or CNC machining or work with Arduinos or even the CAD stuff, the skill sets that they're building are transferable across their whole life, right? Everybody's going to own a home at some point. Everybody's going to have a car at some point. Things are going to go wrong, and mm-hmm. you got to be able to troubleshoot that. And then in the engineering design process helps teach them that and how they can go through and make those troubleshooting, and then hopefully make some solutions or seek help in the right spot and research properly and know what the good data is. So we're not only teaching them the engineering skills, we're teaching them life skills and what we call employability skills. Mm-hmm. You kind of mentioned that in terms of being able to expand the pool that employers can go for, right? We're giving them those skill sets earlier than before, so as opposed to waiting to that sophomore year of college and they're getting an internship and they're walking in and they're freaking out because all of a sudden they're being asked to do all the stuff and they don't know how to do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then they don't know how to ask the questions. Qualifying questions, or they're too scared to. They're like, if mm-hmm. I do that, I'm not going to be around anymore. Well, we know that's not the reality, right?
Yeah.
Being inquisitive is a good thing. Mm-hmm. And so we definitely, and I would say that's through all of our CT classes that we offer at Brighton High School, is we really focus on those employability skills and growing the students, not just within our content area, but through their whole personal being.
Yeah. Related to that, are you seeing any trends with students thinking about going into trades versus going straight into college?
Not so much at Brighton.
Mm-hmm.
Within Livingston County, where we're located here in mid-Michigan, we do have some mechatronics, which it goes into more of the machining, the cell, you know, work cell building. We do have those classes. We have some machining classes at Howell that students can take. But within our county, those classes have never really thrived. And there's a few reasons why. It's not that students don't necessarily want to take them. The hardest part is retaining teachers. Mm-hmm. If you do go to other parts of the state, especially if you go to the western part of the state or more the northern part of the state, those programs thrive heavily, right? You get up north of Flint, around Mount Pleasant stuff. The machining classes that they offer, the woodworking classes they offer are top-notch, the best thing you'll ever see. But in southeast Michigan, I think we get trapped in the focus of the big three,
mm-hmm.
and then all the suppliers that work with them,
yep, tier ones, yep.
And then all of a sudden we have to go to those management positions. We have mm-hmm. to be the engineer,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think you necessarily see, as you kind of mentioned, that the understanding that being a tradesperson, right, the person that's the CNC operator, the person that's running the work cell, or running a press, the amount of salary those people can earn being raised quite a mm-hmm. bit, to the point where they are rivaling entry-level yeah. engineers. Mm-hmm. And probably, and there's statistics that have shown, those people typically will make more over their lifetime than somebody with a 4-year, 5-year engineering degree.
Well,
just because of
the
cost of tuition.
Yeah.
Just because of cost of tuition. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to break that cycle, because it's ingrained in our culture in Southeast Michigan. Everybody's going to go to 4-year school,
yep.
right? Everybody's going to get a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. And the great thing, you know, about Southeast Michigan, that I think it's starting to trend a little bit differently and focusing more on the community colleges. We have some of the best community colleges mm-hmm. in the nation, right? When you go from Macomb Community College to Oakland Community College, Lansing Community College, and Washtenaw Community College, these are some of the best in the nation for the programs they offer, both mm-hmm. in the trades, engineering technicians, going to cybersecurity, that sort of thing. We're really lucky for those. And now it's trying to educate the parents, the counselors, that you don't have to go to U of M, mm-hmm. you don't have to go to Michigan State or mm-hmm. to Kettering,
yep.
that you could go to a Macomb Community College or Oakland Community College, go there for 2 years, and you're going to start work right away. And then if you're like, hey, I really like school, transfer as a junior, because yep. mostly in what they call 2+2 programs.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Or you just stay and you continue to work,
yep.
right? And so it's changing that culture. And that's been a fight. I've been teaching now for 20 years. It's been that way all the way through my career.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're seeing a little bit of movement, especially post-COVID,
yep.
As people start to see that tuition raise so high. Mm-hmm. How can I get to work faster and quicker?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's such a fascinating perspective, because we've had people on here, you know, who've talked about going into trades, but we've never had an educator's perspective. So mm-hmm. I feel like hearing that from you, like Southeastern Michigan, just because of where we are, it changes the game, yep. you know? When yep. you move to those more rural areas, those trades become more valuable.
Yeah.
It's really
yeah.
interesting.
You know, if you ever want to see some of the projects, so there's an organization, statewide organization, called the Michigan Industrial Technology Education Society, MITES, and they have a design competition and all areas of manufacturing competitions that they run each year. If you ever get a chance to go to their state competition, which this year I think it's in Gaylord.
MITES does the backhoe.
Yep.
Yeah, I participated
yep.
in MITES.
Yep, there you go. Oh. So they have categories from CAD, mechanical, architecture, additive manufacturing. But if you really want to see the good stuff, the woodworking mm-hmm. is next to nine. These are high school students producing furniture that costs hundreds of dollars, and they sell it. I mean, this is craftsmanship beyond craftsmanship, mm-hmm. but then they do metals
yep.
And that sort of thing. But again, you see a lot of schools that compete heavily in those categories are more of your rural school districts.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there's a correlation with the type of industry that's there with the agriculture mixed in with small industry or where, if there is a correlation there, but that's where you still see a lot of those programs thriving.
I think it is all society-based, right? Like the area you grow up in is just kind of, you get pigeonholed a little bit into following that
right.
that route. I mean, our dad was an ironworker, right? So, you know, but his thing was, you're not going to do what I'm doing. Like,
right.
I'm doing this so you don't have to. So please do anything else. Like, you know, and like he's on the trade side. So, you know, he always, growing up, would always complain about engineers, just hated them. Them and architects were like his nemesis.
Right.
You know, and, you know, but at the same time, he's like, I want you to be an engineer because their life is a lot easier than mine.
Right.
You know, and that's what I want for my children. And I think that's what people are fighting, right?
Yeah.
Is they want their kids to have a better life. And it's going to be a whole generation of people going through trades and seeing that there is a better life for people to finally adopt that idea.
Right. And that's really what I've striven in my program mm-hmm. is to expose them to those, right? We do have CNC machines. We have some manual manufacturing machines as well, turning machines and mills, that we're at least exposing the kids that these are here and that they exist. And I think one of the big things that my program that we do is not only teach them stuff in-house, but we go out to different manufacturing mm-hmm. facilities. And the manufacturing facilities are not what they were in the 50s and 60s,
mm-hmm.
not even close. And
no.
I think that's the misconception too, is that if you're that tradesperson, you're going to be in a dirty, nasty, loud environment. We know that's not the case, right? For I would say most industries, like those, that trend has changed quite a bit in what they look like. And so getting students out of the classroom and starting to tour some of those facilities and talking with not only the engineers, but talking with the people that are running the presses or the machines and kind of getting a sense of what their life looks like and what their pathway has led them to is important. Because, you know, a lot of companies, especially in Southeast Michigan, they'll hire people with no skill sets to run a machine, and they'll train them right on the spot because they can't find people, right? And what the students don't necessarily understand is those people are walking in, what, making 20, 30, 40 bucks an hour with no skills, right? And really what they want to see is can you show up on time?
Yep.
Can you be respectful and be inquisitive and be willing to talk through a process? And so that's one of the things that I've tried to do with my program is, even though we don't specialize in it, because, again, my background is in design. It's in CAD design, mechanical design. Is even though I'm not an expert in it, at least I can expose them to it, and then we can learn together.
Yep.
And that also teaches the students that even though I am the quote-unquote teacher or the boss of the classroom, even I'm still learning, right? And it's learning is a lifelong prospect, right? You're never done learning. And we know with our industries, they're changing so rapidly, right? How do we? We're already training. I think we've talked before about it. We're training students right now for jobs that don't exist. And those jobs, you know, are going to be here in 2 or 3 years. And we have no idea what skills they're going to need to have.
Right.
Other than the basic employability skills, understand the design concept and the engineering design process. If they can get those, then the technologies will just fall in place.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I try to expose the students to, that even as me as an educator, that I'm learning and I'm always constantly going through that design process and going through the loop.
Adapting to change is huge in our industry.
Right.
Things are always changing, and the quicker you can adapt, the better suited you are, for sure.
Yeah.
So before we wrap things up, I have a couple questions to kind of bring this all full circle, and I want to, you know, be very clear with anyone listening as to your thoughts on it. First question. For anyone thinking about expanding, like, their CTE program, what would you have to say to them? Like, what, you know, I know it's kind of puts you on the spot, but I mean, it's
So I'm really lucky in the district that I'm in. So when I took over for the program, we were in about a 1,500 square foot facility. And it had been that way for a very long time. And as we were getting more students coming in, and I was expanding the program with bringing in corporate partnerships and developing it, we had the buy-in of the district, right? So ultimately, you got to have your administration and go to bat for you. Because once we filled up that 1,500 square feet space, we were able to go to another part of the building where they actually tore down a wall, which costs money, right? And make a 3,500 square foot space. Within a couple of years, we filled that one up, and anyway, we still had a lot of interest of students. They tore down another wall, and we were in a 5,000 square foot facility. Brighton recently just built a 20,000 square foot steam center, where 6,000 of it is where my program is currently housed. So I think the biggest thing for anybody who wants to expand or looking to expand a program is making sure that you're working with your administrators and showing them the advantages of what you're doing, whether that be design competitions and showing that, what is looking at post-graduation data, right? So with my program, based upon our Perkins grant funding, we have to do exit surveys 1 year after graduation. And so they want to know, hey, are students enrolled in the program that they studied in high school? Are they – or are they working in it, right? Throughout my career, we average about 98-99%, which is a crazy big number, that students 1 year after graduation are still pursuing that degree. And I think even after that, we're still in like the 70% range.
I've hired three of them.
Right? So you have to have that data to back it up, right? And then working with advisory boards, bringing in corporate partnerships, and it's not so much sponsorships in terms of they're going to, you know, provide you money or equipment. It's more of, can they help support what is best practice going on? And can they provide, you know, what are the trends and what are the things that they need, right? And we all are, as our programs, we're built around our community, mm-hmm. right? You know, with where we're at Southeast Michigan, it's hard for me to really talk and communicate with a lot of companies that are on the far east side of yep. Detroit, just because of the distance and whatnot. But being able to have that support, that helps build the data set that you can go back to your ministry and say, see, this is what's needed. We have the students, right? We have students that are interested in it. And this is where we want to go to. Ultimately, though, because it does come down to facilities, right? So our buildings, you know, are fairly old mm-hmm. in terms of high schools. You know, you look at Brighton High School, for example. We've been added on to, I think, 7 or 8 times. The original was built back in 1959. Mm-hmm. So it's a sprawling school. But even newer high schools, there's not the flexibility, mm-hmm. right? And so that's becomes an issue as you start to look at it. So I would say that, you know, again, the big thing is be able to track data, stay in communication yep. with former students. You know, LinkedIn is a great way to do that, mm-hmm. Which I do with a lot of my former students. Work with corporate partners and then make sure your administrators have buy-in with what you're doing.
And that was going to be actually my follow-up question, so I'm glad you incorporated into it, was the corporate partnerships and how vital are they to the program, and then, you know, the return that they're getting, right, in terms of they're helping create, like I mentioned earlier, that bigger workforce that they can pull from and introduce, you know, they are helping introduce more people to manufacturing and just making the industry stronger as a whole.
Yeah, that's, and, you know, I would say as a new teacher, you know, again, I've been doing this for 20 years now, you know, you don't know what you don't know, mm-hmm. right? So when I came back to Livingston County or mid-Michigan area, I really didn't know anybody, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's 5 years, 6 years outside of when I graduated high school from the area. So my big context was, to be honest, it was working through my students mm-hmm. and parents that were working in local companies. So really the build for us was not so much me necessarily talking to them initially, but saying, hey, can you give a tour? Mm-hmm. Can I bring 10, 15 students out to see what your facility looks like? So they can see what's going on in these buildings that they drive by every day. Mm-hmm. And they have no idea what's going on inside them and the cool stuff that's happening. So we've been able to build those partnerships the way I've done it is through tours and guest speakerships. And that's led us then me talking with those engineers on the side, you know, after the tour is winding down or just off to the side about, hey, this is what the students are working on. There's some of the projects. And they say, oh, this is pretty cool. Maybe we try doing something like this. Oh, I mm-hmm. never thought about that because, you know, again, when you get into education, you're developing a lot of stuff on your own, especially as an engineer. You know, I'm the only person in my building that has any clue with what I do in my building. Yeah. And we have 110 teachers, right? So we run into the situation of how do we develop the curriculum? How do we expand it or consistently expand it or at least adapt it to what's going on currently? So the tours have really helped mm-hmm. me build that practice because then I'm learning stuff too, right? Yeah. I'm walking through buildings and that I didn't know anything was going on. They're talking. I'm like, oh, I can add this part of my lesson for here. We're talking about threads and they're doing this. I have that connection piece, right? We went to a stamping plant last week and we're talking about forming hexagonal heads for bolts. Very similar process, mm-hmm. right? And I'm able to tie that in. And all of a sudden, the student's like, oh, there's a gotcha moment, mm-hmm. right? It's not just somebody up there talking, theoreticals. No, you actually saw it, and this is where we saw it at. Mm-hmm. So building it through that way, and that's allowed us to expand it going forward.
Well, you've also started expanding to curriculums outside of the CTE program as well, you know, helping teachers incorporate some of the tools that you have to their program as well.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, when you look at, again, if you're looking at an engineering curriculum, yep. there is, unlike your algebra, your biology, where there's standardized curriculum, like everybody's going to learn the same things no matter where you go to school at. When you get into engineering and manufacturing, we're kind of left up to our own devices yep. in a lot of ways. And so there are, you know, curriculum packages you can purchase, and there's textbooks you can purchase. But again, like we said, with industry changing so rapidly, you know, a textbook's static. It can only mm-hmm. get you so far. You know, canned curriculum can only get you so far. It only lets you adapt so much. And so one of the things that I've been doing throughout my career is as I do create my own curriculum and I am able to edit it and develop it as software changes, as we add new things, as a student comes back and says, hey, this was great, but we need to add this extra piece, right? And they're giving the feedback to the point, too, where now students are actually writing tutorials and curriculum for other students. And so one of the things that as I publish my stuff on our class website, other teachers from around the nation and really actually around the world have picked up on it and then they email and we get into collaboration mode, right? And I've done it myself as well where, I really like this. Can I use this? And I would tell you probably 99% of teachers would be like, yes, please do, right? Because we want to grow. We understand the trouble. We understand the plight, if you will, of trying to build something from scratch. You know, there was a time through my career that I'd probably be writing, you know, 6, 7, 8 tutorials a week. And we're talking 10, 15 pages. And that's on top of teaching. Right? And so being able to collaborate with other engineering teachers and kind of see what they're doing. And, you know, in teaching, we always talk about bake, borrow, and steal type of stuff. And that's what we do, which has been really, really, really great. Which has led us then to go meet each other at different conferences, industry conferences, and that sort of thing as well to develop that practice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I want to give you an opportunity if there's anything that you wanted to say specifically while you're on the show before I kind of start to wrap everything up.
No, I did, you know, thanks for the opportunity. You know, engineering education at the high school level, the secondary level, most people don't know we exist. And so to have an opportunity to come on and talk with you, you folks, it's been wonderful because it's amazing when I go, even when I go to conferences around the nation and I'm meeting with post-secondary people, right? University people. And we're talking about, oh, yeah, we're doing it this at the high school level. And they're like, you offer engineering at the high school level? Yeah, we do. And this is all the stuff doing. They're like, no, you don't. And then we're able to pull out the data, which is pretty cool for us to see. So to be able to talk about that we do exist. And I would say most high schools have some sort of design, engineering. They call it all different things, technology classes. They offer something for students to start to get exposed to it. The key is how do we get more and more students into those along with their core academic classes?
Well, I'm not afraid to say this, but I think on behalf of the manufacturing industry, I want to thank you for what you do. I mean, without people like you, you know, manufacturing just wouldn't exist, right? You really inspire students and get them involved where, you know, a lot of us are focused on the industry. You're focused on making sure that there's people in the industry, and I can't thank you enough for that. As I said, I mean, I've hired 3 of your students myself, you know, so thank you for that, and thank you for being on the show.
And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
All right, until next time, thank you.
Bye. This podcast is brought to you by Promus Incorporated, hosted by Matthew Rawl, mixed and edited by Ben Parsons, and produced by myself, Lauren Rawl. If you have any questions or would like to be on the podcast, please reach out to podcast@promusinc.com.